Hello and welcome to Is This Thing On, the podcast hosted by me, Sachin Nakrani, and the woman who once ran the London Marathon in under 2 hours, but doesn't like to boast about it. Lindsay Bowers, how are you?
I ran the London Marathon in how long?
Under 2 hours.
Where did you get that information?
You don't like to boast about it, but I looked through the record books. 2015, 1 hour 59.
Where are you getting your information from?
I'm just
making
this up.
Because, first of all, yeah, okay, I was about to...
It's a complete lie. I'm only saying that to give... me an excuse to say that I once ran the London Marathon, but I didn't run it in under 2 hours. I almost ran it in 5, actually. 4 hours 50 minutes, quite slow, but
4 hours 50?
Yeah, 4 hours 50. I wanted to do it in 4 hours 30. That was my target. 2016 I ran the marathon, but I couldn't quite get around it. It was brutal. A wonderful day. Have you ever even thought about doing the London Marathon?
I'm so confused because yes, I have run the London Marathon.
You have?
And it was in 2016.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Okay, listeners, I just got to say, this was not planned. This is a complete coincidence. So, right, we got to get into this then. You ran the London Marathon in 2016?
I did, yeah.
Holy cow, so
and
did I.
I did it faster than you.
Yeah, no, I was very disappointed in my time.
Well, actually, but quite a bit. I did it in 4 hours 34 minutes, something like that.
So about 16 minutes before me. Wow,
yeah.
That's brilliant. So we were on the track together.
We were.
Well, we weren't going to talk about this, but we've got to talk about it, obviously.
No, not too long, because anyone who's not into running, honestly, their eyes glaze over whenever I mention it.
No, but it's true. It is one of those things I always try and get to conversation as much as possible, and I thought I'd use this intro as a way to do it, but I didn't realise I was talking to someone who's not only done it, but beaten me.
I beat you.
So, sorry. How did you find it?
Do you know what? It was actually the best day of my life so
far.
Isn't
it?
Yeah, it really was. It was emotional. It was a challenge. I did it for a close friend who was very poorly. Did you get a press place? Did you do it as press?
I did get a press
place. Yeah, me too. That makes it even better, doesn't it? Because you don't have to queue for the loos.
So I should say, if you work in the press, obviously, you get invited to do the London Marathon. I think it was 4 of us from The Guardian who took a place. So,
there's about 10 of us from Good Morning Britain.
Yeah. No, I loved it. I did it for Cancer Research UK, because in memory of my aunt who died from breast cancer in 2003. It was... from a physical point of view, horrendous. About the halfway mark, I was really struggling. I reached a point around, I think, about 14 miles where I thought, I can't do this anymore. I'm about 5 seconds away from stopping, but then I thought, I can't. And I pushed through and I got there. But as a day, I totally agree with you, one of the best things I've ever done. The crowds were unbelievable.
Oh, my God. Yeah, nothing like it. And I did it for, as I said, a cause close to my heart. I did it for the Amy May Trust. Have you ever heard of Amy May?
No, I haven't.
She's a close friend of mine who I worked with at ITV, and she has a severe nut allergy, and her allergy put her in a wheelchair, completely unable to do anything, and she's still 5-6 years later very, very ill. So back then I was running it for her, so it was very, very, very emotional. Well, that was a random sort of...
That was insane.
...kind of meander into something we weren't planning on talking about at all.
Yeah, it was just meant to be a throwaway line in my intro. It's turned into a discussion. But anyway, let's move on from that. As you say, people who don't run, who haven't done a marathon, get sick of talking.
Yeah, they're probably turned off now. Great.
Exactly, hearing people talk about marathon. We are back at the Duke. Having been at the Blue Boat in Hammersmith last week, talking to the wonderful Storm Huntley. I've got to say, being back here... it's like kind of putting on an old pair of slippers or falling into an old comfy chair. Just sort of feels, this isn't my local, obviously it's your local, but just feels very comfortable back here. I mean, the Blue Boat was great, but it was quite a hectic big pub, and this is lovely and chilled out. And especially today, it's a Thursday afternoon, or Thursday early evening, I should say. Pretty quiet, pretty chilled out.
Can I just say something about last week? I'm actually a little bit mortified about how drunk I was in the last episode. And... I'm trying to really mute myself now. I'm trying to speak quietly and not drink too much, although I have had probably a couple of glasses of red wine already. Last episode, Sachin turned up to the pub a little bit after me and Storm. Me and Storm had a little catch-up and probably drank most of a bottle of red wine between us, and I drink far quicker than her. And yeah, I mean, anyone who's listened to last episode, I was a bit abrasive, let's say. So I'm going to try and tone it down this time. But I am on the red wine again, so let's see how it goes.
Well, we got the tube home together, and you were saying on the way back, I hope you don't mind me mentioning this, that you thought you were probably too drunk. And I thought you're absolutely fine. And then I listened back to it, and I was editing the podcast, and I thought, she was a bit hammered, actually.
Oh, but dear.
It was good. It made for a good podcast.
I mean, it is a drinking podcast, but maybe shouldn't drink quite that much.
No, exactly. We're here to drink. We're here to have
fun.
As
I've literally taken a sip.
Yeah,
right,
we're
now
on the wine again, partly because I'm a bit tired. I didn't feel like lager. I just felt like a nice glass of wine. And being tired is very apt for this podcast, which I'll come on to in a second. But just to say thank you to Storm, who was an absolutely wonderful guest.
And Boo.
And Boo, sorry, forget to mention Boo. Both of them were great, so we'll definitely try and get Storm on at another point. But yeah, we're back at the Duke. Episode 4, it's just me and Lindsay, no guests today. Very chilled out atmosphere in the pub today. Very nice, very calm, very chilled out. As ever, we're going to have a bit of a deep dive conversation. We're going to talk about anxiety, which is quite a deep, serious topic, but something that we're both sort of affects both of our lives, so we're going to get into that. We'll have the usual quiz as well. And before that, we'll also have a Twitter related chat. But before that, we're going to have a bit of a TV chat, Lindsay, because there's something you want to talk about, isn't there?
So, because when we started this podcast, we thought if we see anything we like, you know, music, film, plays, we'll talk about it. And to be honest, when it comes to TV, I have the lowest concentration span ever. I'll start watching loads of things and then, you know, kind of abandon it. My other half will carry on watching it and I'll fall asleep on the sofa. But I found a TV series that has just absolutely blown my mind. It's called Undone and you can find it on Amazon. I think it's released a week or so ago, and I absolutely love it. It's an animated series, 8-part. Every episode's only about 20 minutes or so, and it's actually done with rotoscoping animation. Do you know what I mean when I say that? Rotoscope. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's when animators draw over filmed footage. Okay. So you know, if it's an actor you recognise, you can see it's them and their face expressions and stuff, but it's drawn over the top. It looks really cool. So Undone is about a 28-year-old woman called Alma, I think, and she lives in Texas and she is very, very bored with the mundanity of her life. And then she's in a car accident which almost kills her, and then after that she finds her relationship with time shifts, and all of a sudden she's visited by the apparition of her dead father, who's telling her, you come from a family of time travellers and I want you to learn how to use your skills so you can go back in time and prevent my death, which sounds kind of crazy, but actually I think the whole series is supposed to be a big metaphor for severe mental illness.
Okay.
And it is just, it's the woman who plays the main character. It's Rosa Salazar, who plays Alita, Battlefield Angel. Have you seen that animated film that was out quite sort of in the last few months?
No, I haven't seen it.
I didn't think much of Alita, but I think that was sort of her breakthrough role. This actress, I think, is phenomenal. I think she's one to watch. This programme is just completely beautiful and profound in words I can't even begin to find the words, to be honest. It just had me absolutely hooked.
But actually, I've got a program to plug as well, sort of plug, because it's not great but it is interesting. But I do want to mention it. So I'm watching something called The Loudest Voice, which is a 7-part series on Sky Atlantic, and it's about Roger Ailes, the former Republican strategist who founded Fox News in the mid-90s, who died I think in 2017. Russell Crowe plays Ailes. And he literally looks astonishing, because Ailes was basically an obese man who had very thinning hair, big sort of bald, fat, horrible bald head, with sort of hair falling back at the back. And Crowe transforms into him, honestly.
Did he put on weight or put on a fat suit?
Well, no, he put on a fat suit. He was prosthetics, yeah. So basically it's the story of Fox News and how it became this malign influence in American media. Sienna Miller plays his wife, Beth. She's got sort of prosthetics around her face as well, so she's slightly transformed.
It's really make her uglier,
different, not ugly, just look different, older and different. So she's really good in it. Sienna Miller. Russell Crowe's really good in it as well. Seth MacFarlane, the guy who founded Family Guy, he's in it as well.
I like him.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't think it's great though. Lucy Mangan, who reviewed it for The Guardian, basically said it's not good enough, which is, I think, sums up quite well. You know, when you compare it to documentaries that are around about Ailes and Fox News, it doesn't stack up to them. For me, it feels very TV movie-esque. It's quite melodramatic. And I think it, personally, I think, like Lucy Mangan feels, I think, as well, doesn't, it focuses too much on Ailes. It tells his sort of personal story too much and not really about the influence of Fox News and how damaging it's been and the fact it's essentially led to Donald Trump. So, but it is interesting, it is good. If you know nothing about Fox News, if you know nothing about Roger Ailes, who are, you know, him and it are hugely influential in modern day politics, and you can get, and you have got Sky Atlantic, I do recommend downloading it and watching it. Should we go on to Twitter?
Yeah. Seen anything interesting on there lately?
Well, I saw an interesting tweet by TV personality Lindsay Bowers yesterday.
Should we talk about your personality? Give me a break.
Should we talk about your hairdressing tweet, which was very funny? Go on, what happened?
Oh, you're going to make me relate it now.
I'm going to make you relate it. Go on.
So I got my hair did yesterday because it'd been about 6 months since I got it cut, and I was starting to look like a cave woman being dragged through a hedge backwards. And I went to my local hairdresser here in lovely Wanstead, and had a lady who I haven't had before, and she was very kind of one of those ones who's into small talk, you know, asking me, you know, where I live and what I do, and you feel like you have to ask questions back, and I say to her, oh, so what do you do for a living, while I'm sitting in a chair in front of her. So, you know, I tweeted a picture of a nice shiny haircut saying, unfortunately, this is the last haircut I'm ever going to have because I can't actually come back to the hairdresser's after asking her that.
So how did she respond
question.
To that?
A bit of a blank look.
That's amazing. No, I agree with you. I hate small talk, especially with the two that you always get sucked into it with is taxi drivers and people who cut your hair. And I had a bizarre conversation with a guy who cut my hair ages ago where... So I got into the chair and he said to me, close your eyes, because he was obviously sort of cutting in the front. And I closed my eyes and then he said to me, are you tired? And I went, no. He goes, oh, it's just that you've closed your eyes. That literally happened, but I didn't know how to react to that. But no, that was very funny.
Do you think he thought you were being rude?
He literally told me to close my eyes, so I don't understand how he then thought. He was the one who said, close your eyes.
I think he might have meant just for a few seconds, while he was cutting
maybe
around there, and then you just went...
Yeah, it was definitely the snoring that may have indicated I was tired. No, I didn't snore. It was an odd conversation. Let's move on.
Right.
So, should we talk about the other Twitter-related thing we want to talk about?
Far more
serious.
Yeah.
So, we were going to have a chat about online trolls. Mm-hmm. Now, part of the reason we wanted to talk about this was, just grabbing a piece of paper, was quite recently, so a few weeks ago, Gary Lineker and a few other celebrities, Rachel Riley from Countdown, came out in support of a report which was basically sort of discussing how we should deal with online trolls. And let me just find the authors of this report. So I found it, yep. So it's a Centre for Countering Digital Hate. CCDH, and they commissioned and published a report focused on political trolls with extreme ideologies that apparently, according to them, vary considerably. But basically, in sort of simple terms, it is about trolling and how to deal with trolls. And to summarise, Gary Lineker, Rachel Riley, a few other people have come out and said, essentially, correct me if I'm wrong, that they are now going to take the stance of ignoring trolls completely. And that's their stance.
That's what I've got from the reports, yeah.
Don't feed the trolls. So we wanted to discuss this because obviously we're both on social media. We've both been affected by trolling. And I mean, I'll go first on this. I absolutely agree with this stance. So to give my kind of story, I suffered quite badly from this. So I joined Twitter in about 2011. And I'll be absolutely honest, I didn't really know how to do it, essentially. And I sort of went in two-footed and was very bullshy and very cocky on there. And I work as a sports journalist. And that's a dangerous thing to do because... football fans are very partisan for obvious reasons. Most of them support different clubs. There's a lot of rivalries. So I was very open about the fact I supported Liverpool. And I sort of took the piss out of other clubs and stuff. And I was very bolshy and very cocky and all that stuff. And that got me into, to cut a very long story short, got me into an argument with, I won't mention them because I don't want to give them the oxygen publicity, but a Manchester United fanzine. And for people who don't know, Manchester United, Liverpool, big rivals. Manchester United fanzine, basically populated by a load of horrible people, essentially decided to target me because I had done the horrible, apparently illegal, morally dubious thing of being a national sports journalist who was very open about the fact that he supported Liverpool Football Club, the team they hate. So they essentially targeted me. We got into rows and they came at me, I came at them. I attacked them, they attacked me. And what this basically led to in 2012, and I remember specifically October 2012, in fact, I remember the day exactly, 20th of October 2012, coming up to the 7-year anniversary of it, they put out accusations about me on in their fanzine, which is online and in print at the time, but also on Twitter, about me, which was essentially saying that I was behind a perverted Twitter account, which is an anonymous account of somebody trying to basically hit on women in a very seedy way. They said it was me, which was complete lies. And it was really damaging, really hurtful, and caused me problems, obviously, at home. I had to explain myself to my wife, to my friend. Well, I didn't have to explain myself to my friends, but I felt a duty to do it and to deny it. Felt a duty to deny it to my boss at work at the time and insist to him that it wasn't true, and thankfully he backed me completely, which I appreciated. But it was really upsetting and really damaging, and my reaction at the time was to come off Twitter immediately, because by that stage I just kind of had enough of the abuse, and I was getting tons of abuse from Man United fans and people who read this fanzine. And that was kind of the wrong thing to do, because it was almost an admission of guilt. I came off immediately and it made me look guilty, which I regret. But the thing I don't regret is once I came back on, sort of in the summer of 2013, I think it was, I just basically blocked those people specifically, and anyone who abused me on the basis of those false accusations, I immediately blocked and ignored. And it's done me wonders, not wonders, it's probably a bit strong, but for me it's been absolutely the right thing to do. I totally agree with this kind of stance for the likes of Rachel Riley and Gary Lineker. Don't feed the trolls, they are seeking attention. Their purpose is to upset you, to spread hate, and I think the way you do that is by responding to them, by giving them the oxygen of publicity, and by retweeting them, quote tweeting them, because that's what they want. And there's really something, I'll let you get in here in a second, Lindsay, but there's something really interesting in this which I want to say. So this is a quote from Rachel Riley. She was talking to about this to Victoria Derbyshire from the BBC. I'll read this verbatim. She said, if a public figure has, say, 500,000 followers and you retweet a troll, and 95% of your followers say, this is appalling, this is disgusting, this is racist, this is horrible, that is 5% or 25,000 people that you have exposed to a racist. And I don't want to do that. I've got no need to see what those people are writing. So for me, that's the thing. You're then exposing these horrible people to other people, so they're getting the publicity they want, but also you're then allowing them to upset other people. So that was one of the things. I didn't want to give them the oxygen publicity, and I didn't want to let them upset other people, specifically my family and my friends. But if I'm right, say you've got a slightly different approach. You have exposed these people. You've quoted them. You've tried to bring them out into the light. Is that fair?
And I want to say something on your situation as well, actually, because before we started this podcast, your situation is so bad. You had to warn me about it, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I'll give more context on this. So, yeah, and this was really important to me, because some people listening to this may be aware that I used to host another podcast, the comedy podcast, which was essentially based on sitcoms, with somebody who I don't want to mention, because again I don't want to give him the oxygen publicity, because he really let me down in my opinion. But he didn't know about my situation, and we did this podcast, and we were about 10 episodes in, and we had guests on. I don't want to mention them either, because I felt they let me down badly. And these guests, the podcast went absolutely fine. We put the podcast episode out. These people who had been the guests had obviously then been informed via Twitter, Facebook, whatever, who I was, in inverted commas. They then asked my co-host to delete the episode because they didn't want to be associated with me. They didn't come to me and try and get a response or allow me to defend myself. They just went straight to him and said, can you delete the episode? My co-host deleted the episode without running it past me, which was really upsetting. And then we had a chat about this, about what I felt this was related to, because the other people hadn't said specifically what it was related to, but I kind of knew what it was. I knew what it was related to. So I said, look, I know what this is related to. We had a discussion about it. Or anyway, he went away and found out what it was, and he came back immediately and said he didn't want to do the podcast anymore, which I thought was just unbelievable. He didn't even give me a chance to defend myself. He made a snap decision based on what online trolls have said. And that's why it is a real big thing for me, because even though this happened 7 years ago, it's still affecting my life. So before me and Lindsay started this podcast, I said to her, we came here at the Duke, I remember, and I said,
yeah, we met here.
Before we start this, you need to know this, because if this is an issue for you, we obviously can't continue, because I can't go through that again where we're doing a podcast and you end it because of this, and you are going to get issues with this, you're going to get abused. And to your absolute credit, Lindsay, you were like, no, let's not take them on, not bring it on, but we'll deal with it. We'll deal with it as it goes along.
Do you know what? I took it on board, and you know, slight alarm bells were ringing a little bit. I'm not going to lie, like, what am I getting myself into? But he's been honest with me, and you know, I looked into it. You know, I had to Google, saw what was out there about you, and I decided I didn't believe it. It looked so obviously contrived to smear you. Like, it was just such a shoddy, poor attempt. Like, but also, even if it turned out that there was proof it was you, and it was you, I don't care. What they were accusing you of wasn't that bad. It was an account that kind of tweeted some dodgy stuff, but it didn't really hurt anything, anyone. And either way, it was 7 years ago. And either way, I don't care. I like you. I'm doing this podcast with you. What does bother me is when we released our first episode, I was inundated with Man U fans trying to scare me off doing a podcast with you. Do you know, do you know this? Do you know that? Links to articles. Just really, really quite, you know. And I thought, geez, like, oh my God. And I usually, I think you were going to bring up earlier, usually when I get trolled, I like to respond. I like to screen grab. I like to shame and name. I like to go to town on them. In this case, I was like, these are grown men who are obsessed with something that didn't even happen 7 years ago. This is just like, literally, I feel sorry for them. And I'm not even gonna block them. And you know, it's made me realise this thing that's come out in the news about ignoring people. That's what I should have always done a lot all along, and I haven't. But from now on, I am gonna go take trolls. I am.
It's made you decide to change your approach.
It really has changed my stance, because I used to kind of give them the attention they deserve. And also, I've had a really, really negative experience myself, and I've kind of been gearing myself to talk up about this, wondering whether I should or not. But I'm going to. I think, in a way, I was sort of a troll myself once, you know. Not in the kind of hiding behind a fake name and smearing people, but I basically got into a really, really ugly situation where I kind of had a Twitter nemesis. We're going back quite a few years ago now, and I'd split up with a boyfriend, and it was a pretty ugly split, and he had a friend who I didn't even know, and they lived in a different country, but I'm not going to go into all the ins and outs, but I ended up in a massive war of words with this random person, who actually I'm going to say that they're a woman in another country. We were just absolutely vile to each other for a long time. Just slinging mud at each other on Twitter all the time. She'd have like a gang of kind of, like, little Twitter gang where she'd get people to kind of throw mud at me, and it was just so personal. Like, she'd make comments about the way I looked, the way I talked, really personal things my ex-boyfriend had told her about me, and It made me ill. It made me so anxious. It was just absolutely horrific. But looking back, I just think, why did I waste so much energy on it? But I know I was to blame as well, because I threw mud as well. I said really unkind things about her as well. I was effectively a troll right back at her. And we were like two kids in a playground. And it got to the point where we'd blocked each other. But, you know, if you're not logged into Twitter, you can still go to someone's account and see what they're saying about you. Yeah. And she went through a point where she was tweeting about me, like, about, on average, every 10 minutes or so, something really, really, really nasty about me. And I would be sitting on a page refreshing, just to read the next thing she said about me, like, with my heart, like, beating in my chest, racing, thinking, what's she going to say next? What's she going to say next? And how unhealthy is that, right? looking back now, I think, well, I know she has mental health issues because it got to the point where I actually reached out to her and I sent her a private message saying, I wish you well, what are we doing? And I expected to just be like absolutely kind of slaughtered back, but she was like, I wish you well too, what are we doing? We both bring out the worst in each other. Yeah. And we kind of had a bit of a truce. So we had a truce, decided to stop it. And then she just went back to, she started tweeting shit about me again. So I was like, fuck this. And in the end, I just left it. In the end, I just thought, I'm not going to look. I don't care anymore. And it was a couple of years ago. But I still think, oh my God, I can't believe I let so much, that kind of hatred kind of consume me. And I think about it a lot now, even now. I think, why? What were we playing at? What were we doing? I can't go into all the ins and outs, but we were both just wasting far too much energy on it. And do you know what? I would love more than anything to have a coffee or a drink with her now and just chat to her and be like, what was that about? And I bet you're an all right person. I'm an all right person. But when you're behind a keyboard or a phone, you say things you wouldn't say to someone's face, don't you?
It's kind of the equivalent of road rage, isn't it? You're protected. Yeah. You've got to scrub. I mean, the people who throw, you know, who've thrown abuse at me, and I'm sure thrown abuse at you, as you say, they wouldn't do it to you in front of your face. It's because they've got the safety of, you know, anonymity behind a keyboard. And even if it's not anonymity, there's that distance. And sadly, it's the world we live in. As I said, I mean, I came off Twitter for about 8 months at the back in the last year, start of this year, just to kind of get away from it. And this is one of the things the reports actually suggest, have breaks from social media. And I definitely felt better for it. But then equally, my sort of attitude was, well, first of all, something works in the media. I kind of need to be on social media for practical reasons. But also, I don't want to run from it. Like, I'm entitled to be on social media as much as the trolls. And I shouldn't let the trolls and the people who just generally spout crap on there stop me being on it. But it's how you manage that process. And it's really just what you say, that I'm as I said, when I joined Twitter in 2011, I was kind of an idiot as well, and I've adapted my behavior not to kind of be so antagonistic and abusive and bolshy and stuff, and appreciate that might annoy other people, and in return I just want people to treat me with a bit more respect as well. And as I said, I still get, very occasionally now, but I still get, you know, dribs and drabs of abuse related to what happened to me in 2012.
Yeah.
But I absolutely agree with the policy of, don't engage in arguments. Just if someone's giving you crap, my policy is ignore and block. Ignore them, or block and ignore, however you want to put it. Block them. Honestly, blocking is a brilliant thing to do on Twitter. And in that, I always find ignorance is bliss. You know the abuse is still there. You know it's there behind the scenes. Yeah. But for my own sort of mental health and my own well-being generally, not seeing the abuse makes the world a difference. And I know I'm kind of winning by not giving them the oxygen, the publicity, because all trolls want publicity. They thrive on you retweeting them, you quote tweeting them, and that gives them an extra few followers, or that gives them publicity. And I think absolutely, I mean, I see sort of Gary, you know, I follow Gary Lineker, and as people listen to episode 3 will know, he follows me. And I'd see sort of him quote tweeting people giving him abuse. I just think, Gary, you've got like, I know he's got 7 million followers. Like, why are you giving this idiot who's got 20 followers, who's probably tweeting from his mum's bedroom, why are you giving him this forum? Just ignore him and he will go away. If everyone ignored every troll, I genuinely think they would all go away. The problem is, it needs that unified effort. You can't have that unified effort, because if I ignore somebody else will probably respond, so that person still exists. But it was interesting what you're saying, because I had noticed with you quite a while back that you were pulling these people out, and I did think that personally, I did think that was the wrong stance, because I thought you're giving them exactly what you want, giving them attention, you're biting. But that's interesting you're saying now you've gone the other way. You are going to
I'm going to try. I do find it hard if someone says something offensive to me, or you know, has a pop at me, my natural reaction is to want to defend myself.
Yeah.
But do you know what? I think a lot of the reason why I'm so defensive is because, you know, I'm on social media for my job. I work with TV presenters and I see the absolute vitriol they get every single day. I used to work with Piers Morgan, and I once said to him, how do you kind of sleep at night with the absolute poison people tweet at you? He kind of just, it is literally like water off a duck's back with him. I think he kind of enjoys it. Like he is the master of taking down trolls. And I honestly don't think it actually bothers him deep down. Some other TV presenters I've worked with, I think it does bother them. And I do agree. I think, you know, if you just don't reply and you block, then they can't do it again and then move on. Yeah. Time for a break.
I think time for a break. Deep and interesting, wasn't it? Let's have a break. I think Lindsay's going to go to the bar because we are on the wine tonight. I've got to say, I love red wine. I do love red
wine. I can
get
us another bottle.
Let's get another bottle of
red
wine.
I'm not working tomorrow morning. Wait.
Neither am I. So Lindsay's going to go to the bar and get a bottle of red wine. And then we'll be back straight after that. Off you go, Lindsay.
So we are back from the bar. I've got us another bottle of red. And while I was at the bar, I checked my phone because I put out a tweet and an Instagram saying, we're recording tonight. And whenever I put something out before, I've got like a load of messages that we've ended up kind of reading out on here or replying to. So I actually went the full hog. I was like, hey, give us your messages and we might respond to them. Haven't got any messages.
Bit of a blow, that, isn't it?
Getting a bit too cocky.
We were thinking we're getting quite famous on this podcast. Maybe we're not as famous as we thought.
But I did get one tweet. Can you guess who it's from?
Is it our friend Malcolm?
It's our friend Malcolm.
Love you, Malcolm.
Oh, Malcolm. Only because I said on Twitter, we're talking about trolling tonight. And he's replied to me saying, you could take up the whole podcast with what you've been through. Oh, he is such a sweetie. Every time you see someone being horrible to me, he's one of the first people to stand up for me. And I've never met Malcolm in real life, but Malcolm, you are an absolute sweetie. And I do know that you got a little bit offended after last podcast because we did literally tell you to F off the last couple of episodes, completely in jest, but I think it was like starting to cheese you off a bit. So, Malcolm, we are sorry and we're very glad you're listening.
I apologise as well, Malcolm. It was done with huge affection because you're one of our very few loyal listeners.
You're our most avid listener, I think.
No. Don't worry, we'll not tell you to F off ever again, Malcolm. You're a very appreciated listener and you seem like a very nice man. Neither of us have met you, but you seem good.
And in tribute to you, I shall persevere. Is that the right word? I shall try not to swear for the rest of this podcast.
Really?
I know. It's actually just giving me the most incredulous look of never going to happen, ever. Anyway, moving on to the next subject.
Yeah, well, it's quite a heavy podcast.
A little bit more serious.
Yeah, we talked about online trolling. Now we're going to talk about something, we're going to talk about anxiety. quite a deep one. Don't worry, it will end on a light note. We'll have the quiz as ever, which will be quite lighthearted. But yeah, we want to talk about this as well. So I'm going to ask you a very simple question, Lindsay.
Mm-hmm.
How do you sleep?
Do you know what? I sleep okay.
Hurry up, you're late.
I do. I can fall asleep anywhere, as my other half will tell you. I mentioned earlier, I don't get into many TV programmes because I often just pass out. Mm. So I don't have much of an issue with it, but I think you do, don't you?
I have a massive issue with it, yeah. So I wanted to bring this up because, I mean, on episode one, actually, I don't know if you remember, though, when we did the Anna Friel Q&A.
No, I do remember. Yeah.
I think one of the questions was, what's your worst trait or the trait you least like in yourself? And I said anxiety, and you correctly said, I don't think that's actually a trait. And
it's not a personality trait.
No, it's not a personality trait.
It's something you live with.
And I live with it. And I live with it specifically in regards to sleep. So sleep is a real issue for me, actually.
Because of anxiety?
Because anxiety, yeah. So I have basically the tendency, or I should say the potential, to basically sleep badly every night. I don't sleep badly every night. I'm not someone who suffers with severe insomnia or anything like that. But for me, honestly, going to bed every night, there's an element of jeopardy about it or worry about it because I'm not sure how it's going to go.
You're anxious about falling asleep,
Falling asleep. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the reason I kind of want to talk about this was it kind of came to an head very recently. So I'm going to tell you about a couple of Saturdays ago. And this kind of, when I sort of relay this story, it's going to tell you how ridiculous this all is. But this is basically my life. So a couple of Saturdays ago, very normal, chilled out, kind of family Saturday. I was at home. I was working on a Sunday, editing the Guardian sports section on a Sunday, which I enjoy. Normal sort of, done it loads of times, absolutely fine. So I wasn't worried about that or anxious about that in itself. But I decided quite late in the evening on Saturday, being at home all day, spending the day with my wife and daughter, perfectly fine, chilled that day, that I was going to go for a swim on Sunday morning. Because I hadn't done any sort of exercise for a couple of days. I thought, I'll go for a swim on Sunday morning, local pool. But that then meant getting up 2 hours earlier to make sure I could swim, get home, and then still get my train to work. So as soon as I decided I was going to swim, I suddenly felt, I could just feel my body tensing up again, like thinking, oh right, I've got to get up at 6 o'clock as opposed to 8 o'clock. So it already made me feel quite tense, just immediately. And that was, as it was in the evening, you know, around dinner time, so already, you know, quite late in the day, I'm suddenly getting a bit tense. Anyway, Saturday night, as often happens at our house, I end up, my wife falls asleep on the sofa, I end up watching Match of the Day. Match of the Day finished quite late that evening, I think the Strictly was on or something. So Match of the Day finished around midnight, so I went up to bed after Match of the Day, and it was midnight, and I thought, oh, I've got 6 hours until I've got to get up. So again, anxiety levels rise again, I've got 6 hours, I've got to get to sleep quite
That's
soon.
That's a normal night for me.
Well, this is the thing, what's normal for other people isn't normal for me. So I suddenly go, my head hits the pillow and I go, right, I've got 6 hours. I would have had eight if I wasn't going swimming, but I'm going swimming now, I've got six. Right, I better get to sleep quite soon, I've got a full day of work. So again, I'm slightly stressing. I'm lying there, can't fall asleep because I'm anxious and tense, I'm just not relaxed at all. And then it dawns on me, I thought, hang on, if I go swimming at six and I get back at the time I'm going to get back, I'm actually not going to be able to get the train I meant to get. I'm going to have to get a train later. Anxiety levels rise again. So anyway, essentially what happened was I literally got no sleep that night. I was so tense, so worried, so anxious, I got no sleep. And this isn't the first time this happened. This has happened to me sporadically throughout my life. In 2013 I had a similar experience where on the Sunday, again it was a Saturday night, on the Sunday I was doing something at work which was kind of a bit pressurized, a bit different to what I normally do, something I was a bit worried about, and because of that I literally didn't get any sleep. And that was kind of the final straw at that stage. It got so bad I went to see my GP about it, and they said, we'll refer you to a therapist. So I referred to a therapist, and they diagnosed me with anxiety, which didn't come as a surprise. I knew I was anxious. And the thing that the therapist told me was, the first thing to say is, it's a myth that you have to get sort of 8 hours every night. You don't, as a human being, you don't have to get 8 hours a night. As long as we get sort of,
of course it is, yeah.
As long as we get sort of between kind of 4 and 6 hours every night, then that's kind of fine. And that actually did help, so it just made me relax a bit more and think, okay, look, I don't have to get 8 hours. I don't even have to get 6 hours, so that helped. But long term, it's not really helped me too much. I still have these kind of nights where I just cannot doze off because, you know, something's happening the following day, which just worries me, concerns me, means I can't doze off. Years ago I went to see a GP about this because it's lived with me all my life, to try and get sleeping pills. And what I discovered was GPs can't diagnose sleeping pills unless your problem is particularly severe. Mine wasn't severe enough, so I couldn't get sleeping pills. One thing I did a few years later was I started having a glass of wine just before bed. And that helped for a short while, but the thing is, your body then kind of adapts to it, so that sort of drowsy feeling you get from alcohol kind of disappears as well, so that didn't really help. So it's essentially something I just kind of live with now, really. And the reason I wanted to bring this up was because I had that Saturday quite recently, but also, I'm going to reach down now for another piece of paper. Absolutely coincidentally, after this terrible Saturday, I came across an article on The Guardian's website by a woman called Alana Ha, who is a, let me get her title completely correct here, she's a consultant in sleep disorders at the Royal Brompton Hospital in London. And she actually did an article which is simply titled, A Guide to Getting Good Night's Sleep. So it's madly coincidental, so I thought I'd read that. And just what was interesting on her first line was, people who sleep well do not actively try to get to sleep. They get into bed and sleep arrives. And I thought that was really interesting because what absolutely happens with me, I'm fascinated to get your thoughts on this, is I completely overthink sleeping. I go to bed and I think, right, get to sleep. And the problem is, when you're in bed, you've got nothing but your thoughts. So if you overthink something, it completely overwhelms you, or it certainly overwhelms me. I'm overthinking sleeping. And it's like sort of, if you overthink anything, you almost sort of forget how to do it because you overthink it, you overcomplicate your mind, and I literally forget how to get to sleep. That's at my worst moment. And my wife sleeps like a baby, basically. I mean, just incredible. I don't think she's ever had a bad night in her life. And I once asked her, and she couldn't explain. She just said, well, I just close my eyes and I fall asleep. And it's definitely the overthinking which is a problem with me. And it's definitely linked to anxiety and issues around that. And so when I ask you that question, how you sleep, I'm actually intrigued when you go to bed.
Do you know
Do you just it's hard to explain, it's hard to define, I guess, if you sleep well, but what do you sort of do? Do you just kind of close your eyes and does it just come to you?
I suffer with anxiety as well, but I can sleep. I can. How do I sleep? I mean, a lot of the time, I think it helps, but I am up so, so early every day for work.
Well, say how early you get up again, because you do get up very early, don't
you? My alarm goes off. So my alarm goes off about 5:15 in the morning.
Wow.
And I am a snooze button pusher. But I can exist on very little sleep, I find. And when it comes to actually going to sleep, I do get little bouts of insomnia here and there where I have maybe a couple of nights in a row where I can't sleep, but nothing near, like, you know, proper insomnia is where you can't sleep for a very long time, I think.
And consistently, I think, as well.
Yeah, it's consistently, like literally exactly. Every night, I mean, yeah. I think everyone gets a little restless night here and there. But honestly, a lot of the time I've either started dozing off on the sofa or I'm just so exhausted, I think with me, a lot of it is getting into the right position. I mean, I'll get into bed, I'll lie on my back, look at my phone. I know you shouldn't, but I'll look at my phone, put my alarm on, put it down, and then it's sort of like a routine. I'll kind of shuffle onto my stomach, and once I'm on my stomach and I've said goodnight to kiss my fiance goodnight, it's like, it's almost like I'm on my stomach, my head is kind of resting on my arm, that is, it's almost like it's my physical kind of can't think of the word, signal to my body to fall asleep, and I just do.
Worst thing you can say to someone who can't sleep, and I've had this, is just relax. Like, that is what I am trying to do, but I can't do it. I mean, I've this has been a problem for me since I was a teenager, basically, and I've researched tips and stuff, and the tip you constantly get is, or regularly get is, you know, if you're struggling to sleep, move to a different room and try and sleep there, which isn't very practical for me because in my house, I've got, in the other room is my daughter, and in the other room, there's no bed, it's kind of an office space. I can go downstairs, I guess, but also I want to sleep in my own bed as well. The one thing I definitely try and do, and I'm a bit crap at it, and this refers to what we were talking about before, is don't look at your phone about half an hour before bed. I believe very strongly in unwinding. So, you know, sit on the sofa, watch TV, really try and kind of zone out and chill out, and don't look at my phone, don't get into conversations with people, don't text anyone, just really try and come to a kind of a point where you're almost kind of zen-like, really kind of chilled and calm. Also, we don't have a TV in the bedroom. I fundamentally don't watch TV in the bedroom. That should just be a place for sleeping.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just kind of interesting to kind of get your thoughts. And also, excitingly, we now have a Is This Thing On email address. Set it up today. So it's ittopod@gmail.com. ittopod@gmail.com. And I personally would love to hear from people about their sort of experiences with sleep, any tips they've got. And also, if they just want to kind of talk about anxiety in general, you can be anonymous. That's not a problem at all. Love to get your kind of thoughts on it and how you suffer with it, how you struggle with it, how you've overcome it, if you have. I don't think it's even possible to do that. And just share your thoughts, and we'll maybe read them out on the next episode. But I know you, as you've touched on already, anxiety is a big issue for you as well, isn't it? Just generally.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a big issue, but I think it's something that affects everyone in some small way at least, and some others in a very big way. With me, it really, really kind of came to a head probably about 6 years ago, when I was very kind of burning the candle at both ends in terms of just keeping things together at home and in my job. I was in a relationship that was very unhealthy. I was in a job that was very demanding.
Yeah.
There we go. And I had a routine checkup at the doctor for something like inconsequential in the afternoon after work. And work overran, and work had been overrunning a lot, and everything was a little bit crazy. I had an argument with my boyfriend that morning. And I thought, God, I need to get to this doctor's appointment in time, otherwise they won't let me in. And it was just, you know, it was just a checkup. But I got to the doctor's appointment about 10 minutes late. I walked into the reception and said, oh, I'm here for the 5 o'clock. It was 5:10.
and they said, no, you've missed it, you can't have it, you have to rebook. And I collapsed. I just burst into tears. I can't even remember what I said. All I remember is I burst into tears, and the woman who was being very steely behind the desk went from, you have to book again because you're late, went from that to, actually, you can see the doctor now. I was booked to see a nurse because I was actually booked to just have a routine check because I was on the pill at the time. It was just a check-up to make sure my blood pressure was okay and, you know, a re-prescription of the pill. So I was only supposed to see the nurse, but she was like, no, actually, you can see a doctor. And basically, it's because they were like, this girl needs help. And they carted me into a doctor. And he was like, so, what's going on with you? You seem very, very stressed. You've got very upset here. And I said, no, it's okay. It's just I'm late. And, you know, I'm so upset at being late at myself. And he said, well, okay, do you have any other stress in your life? And I was like, no. Everything's absolutely fine. And he was like, you kind of looked at me and I said, well, my relationship is quite up and down and my job is quite demanding, and I've had a very close friend recently almost die and go through this horrific thing, and he just looked at me and went, you're very, very, very anxious.
Immediately just diagnosed you there, like, yeah, as you were talking.
Yeah, yeah. He said you're suffering with anxiety, I can tell. After a little chat. And this doctor was really good. I remember him saying to me, I have depression, and it's just one of those things that just happens to you. It doesn't matter what's going on in your life, it happens to you, but you've got a lot of stresses in your life, so you're feeling it right now. And at the time I was like, I think it's kind of, I'm not quite sold to this. But he prescribed me diazepam and some beta blockers.
Yeah.
Now the beta blockers are something you take daily just to keep everything kind of ticking along. And he said the diazepam you take when you can feel a panic attack coming on. Because actually I think the reason why he diagnosed me with anxiety is because I admitted I'd had a panic attack before. Which, have you ever had a panic attack?
No.
They are very, very scary, especially when you don't know what they are. Now I know what they are. It's funny, anxiety is a general feeling. I mean, you know what anxiety is because you have it, but for me, it's a tight knot in my chest, it stones in my stomach. Even if you have no reason to feel worried about something, you just feel worried constantly. That is anxiety for me. It's only now in my 30s I realise panic attacks, and I had quite a few in my 20s. I don't have them anymore these days. I certainly have anxiety that crops up every now and then, but I know what causes it and I know how to get rid of it. If I have a massive, massive drinking binge, I mean, I know, you know, I drink a lot, but I'm talking going out on a piss and absolutely downing shots and whatever. The last time I did that, I didn't want to leave the house for 2 days.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Anxiety is a bitch, okay? But I feel like we need to dedicate a whole other podcast episode to this. But I just wanted to kind of introduce the fact that we both kind of have our sort of experiences with this. A lot of people out there do, and I'd like you to get in touch and let us know your thoughts. We can carry on touching upon it. I know you want to get people on, guests on, to talk about, in particular, men's mental health. That's something I'm really interested to find out more about.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be a recurring theme of this. I think it's partly maybe the age we live in and people are speaking more openly about mental health, but we're going to definitely dedicate episodes to this, to mental health. As I said, I want to talk about men's mental health specifically. It's something I've suffered with, and a couple of years ago suffered with very specifically. I mean, I was on sertraline, which is an antidepressant, a couple of years ago, to help me during a very sort of particularly dark time. So we will talk about it, but yeah, I just wanted to touch on it. This has been a very, very intense, very deep, I think really interesting podcast. We're now going to get light because Lindsay is taking charge of the quiz, the pub quiz, and I believe, I might be wrong, but I believe it's incredibly frivolous.
No, well, it's, you know.
Let's do it.
We'll find out.
Let's go.
I've
right,
got these
what have
notes
got
in front
me?
Of me, but I've not looked at literally once since I've been here, but now I'm going to read them now. Okay, so, you know how we always do a pub quiz?
Pub quiz, ding ding.
Trademark. First ones to coin that.
First people ever to use the word pub quiz. The words pub quiz.
So I decided to do a would you rather session with Sachin.
Yeah, do it. I'm excited.
You know would you rather where you kind of put two scenarios and... Okay, you're not stupid listeners. You know what would you rather means. Anyway, because I'm not imaginative or clever or funny enough to think of my own ones, I kind of trawled the internet for the best ones I could find. I looked at Reddit, I looked at BuzzFeed, a bit of Googling.
So I've got a few here to ask you, Satch.
Go for it.
So first of all, would you rather have the ability to teleport or be able to create legal £5 notes by clapping?
Say that again.
Teleport,
yeah.
Or £5 note every time you clap.
Wow. That is an incredible
question. Or literally teleport to the other side of the world right now.
I'm going to say, I'm currently topping up our wine. We are on the red wine. And
we're on our second bottle.
Sorry, Mark.
This is the most of anything Satch and drink.
I've got to swear, Mark. I fucking love red wine. It is great. It's my drink of choice now.
It's
I love red wine. I think we're going to have to just be contact. What's bad is that the... Sorry, I will answer your question. What's bad is that the artwork for our podcast is a pint and a glass of white wine. But I think we're moving on to the red wine. I do love red wine. I do love sharing a bottle of red wine. It feels very adulty. That's a word. I don't think
very
so.
Very grown up.
Anyway, to answer your question, I'm going to go with teleporting because I'm not a very money-obsessed person, actually. I sort of live within my means. I'm not obsessed with money. So I don't want a £5 every time I clap. But the idea of being able to just sort of drop myself into other places, I think sounds really exciting. So I'm going to go teleport.
Does teleporting mean you can go in a different time or just a different place?
Well, even time travel. Even time, that sounds
is it?
Thoroughly exciting.
Next one is... Oh, this is a bit of a deep one before we go into some more fun ones.
Right, go on.
This could probably be another hour. Would you rather know when you're going to die or how you're going to die?
Wow, what a question. What a question. So it's when I was going to die or how I was going to die. I think when. Yeah, when. I think I'd want to know how long I've got left.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
Because I was thinking about this earlier and I thought, how? Because if it's a when, then it's a countdown to that date.
Yeah.
But then... I did think if you know how, you're always going to be, like, if it was, for example, if you found out it's going to be an accident, like a car accident, you'd never want to get in a car again. If you know it's going to be cancer, you're just going to be constantly waiting for the signs and symptoms and just be complete hypochondriac. I guess the best scenario is you find out how and it's sort of old age.
But what you're saying, like, say if you know it's a car accident, you might avoid getting into a car, but then can you actually stop this? Or is it inevitable?
No, it's inevitable.
So it doesn't matter anyway, you just got to live your life.
Yeah, yeah. This one, I found this one online, it just made me giggle.
Whether you're a Star Wars fan or not, I mean, I'm not that into Star Wars, and it still made me giggle.
Okay.
Oh, dear, the red light. Goggle, it made me goggle.
It made me goggle. The wine's kicking in.
Okay. Sachin, would you rather talk like Yoda or breathe like Darth Vader?
I'd breathe like Darth Vader. That is some sexy breathing. Definitely.
All the time.
Yeah, I think
literally,
so.
You're standing at the bus stop going, I've got, who could even do it?
Yeah, definitely. What about you?
I have to admit, it's the same. I mean,
Darth Vader's
talking like
Vader
is just not sexy,
Darth
is it?
Vader
Whereas
is.
Darth Vader breathing could be construed as sexy by some.
Yeah,
maybe.
Easy for me, definitely.
Okay,
Darth
that was
Vader,
an easy
yeah.
one.
What's next?
Okay.
Oh, this is a delightful one. Okay.
Go on.
Would you rather eat poo that tastes like chocolate? Or chocolate that tastes like poo?
Oh my word. The first one, I think. Eat poo that tastes like chocolate.
poo that tastes like chocolate.
The first thing we need to know is poo bad for your health? If it's eating poo, if it's not, then I don't see any downside.
We're eating a lot of poo without knowing it in very small amounts.
I don't think there's a downside to eating poo. let me state that clearly. If there's no medical issues with eating poo at a moderate level, then there's no downside to eating poo that tastes like chocolate, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's. Do you know what? Because when I first thought of this question, I thought definitely chocolate that tastes like poo. I would just put up with the taste to not eat poo. But then when I really thought about it, I was like, I thought exactly the same thing as you. Like, it probably isn't that bad for you. We've got one more.
Go for it.
Would you rather date Donald Trump in Keanu Reeves' body or Keanu Reeves in Donald Trump's body?
What a question. I mean, it's essentially a question of what's more important to you, looks or personality, isn't it, really? It's essentially what it boils down to. That's a really good question. Oh my God, that's really tough. I'm going to say I can't stand Donald Trump's physical appearance, whereas I find his personality obviously horrendous, but also quite funny. So I'm going to say Keanu Reeves with Donald Trump's personality.
Yeah, me too.
Right. I think it's near the end of the podcast. It's been a mix of shade and light, shall we say?
I was going to say shit and...
shit and light. Yeah, shade and light. No, it's been really good, really interesting. Before we go, we've got to do what we always do, which is pick a song, our lead out song. And it's my turn, I think.
Yes, get your phone
so
out.
So I'm going to hand my phone, as I said, as we always do.
Do I press shuffle on your phone? You is do. This what
so
I do?
Just for people who've never listened to this podcast before, the way we end every podcast is me and Lindsay hand each other our phones. We hit shuffle on our phones. Lindsay's got Spotify, I've got Apple Music, and whichever song comes up is the lead out music for the podcast. And we don't say what the song is going to be, you'll just have to discover it when you listen to it. So it is my turn this week, so I'm now handing my phone to Lindsay. So Lindsay's got my phone now.
I'm about to press shuffle.
She's about to hit shuffle.
On Sachin Nakrani's
Nakrani's phone.
Don't say what it is.
Press it again. No. Nothing's happening.
You've done it. Look at the song at the bottom. It's a band that is even cooler than Oasis, also from Manchester, and it is a banging track from them, and I don't feel ashamed to say I love this track. I think it's a great... It's a song that gets people on the dance floor, specifically weddings, isn't it?
Yeah, if you're going to a crap wedding, I mean... I'm going to be at my wedding.
It's a bit cheesy. But anyway, we are going to end with this song. I've got
Please
to say,
it
doesn't do my reputation any good.
Please rate and review, guys.
Yeah, we are
Come
done.
Come on, go on over to Apple. Give us 5 stars. Even if you think we're crap, do it as a favour to 2 people who are just, you know, trying their best.
Yeah, as Lindsay's trying to say through a drunken haze.
Yeah, I'm quite fucked now.
You're quite fucked now, I can tell, yeah.
Like, it suddenly hit me like a brick wall.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it's hit me at the end rather than the beginning, like last episode. Okay? Yeah.
We're both a bit tipsy. We're now quite deep into our second bottle of red wine. So as Lindsay was trying to say, that's the end of the podcast. Please rate and review the podcast. We really would appreciate it. Also, and we genuinely mean this, get in touch. So you can get us on Twitter at ITTOpod. You can get us on our new email address, which is ittopod@gmail.com. Send us your messages. Also, as I said, send us your experiences, your advice, your thoughts and anxiety. Really would appreciate them. And keep listening, and we do appreciate everyone listening, especially Malcolm, who we both love. Malcolm, you're the best. Say goodbye, Lindsay.
Goodbye.
And it's bye from me. Bye bye.